Are you looking for a podcast about pro football that doesn't put you to sleep with an avalanche of analytics or insult your fandom with brainless hot takes? Well, hi. I'm Dan Hanzus.
And I'm Mark Sessler.
Oh, hi, Mark. And we're the hosts of Heed the Call, the NFL podcast you've been waiting your whole life for.
Heed the Call covers every game, every storyline, everything that matters, and we do it all with a touch of mirth.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
As we bring in the lead play-by-play voice of the UFC pay-per-view, John Anik, welcome to the show as we have UFC 298 in Anaheim tomorrow. What's going on, man?
Great to be with you. An honor to be on these airwaves. And the energy in Anaheim has just been crazy all week. These people deserve this card, and we're excited to call it here tomorrow night.
Dude, we're excited to watch it. But now, before we get into the pay-per-view and the card itself, today, you being a Bostonian that you are, today we celebrated here at WFAN. We retired number 13 in honor of Alex Rodriguez. What is your thoughts on Alex Rodriguez?
So I've always been an Alex Rodriguez fan. I wanted him to become a Boston Red Sox in the worst way. And I think at the time I was writing a column for a local sports radio station. And, you know, that was a dark day in Boston sports when he became a Yankee. You know, I just have a lot of respect for his ability. And, you know, I know people are divided on him. And, you know, there's no rainbows without a lot of rain, right? But I'm an A-Rod supporter, always have been. And, you know, there are a lot of people that want to see him in a Red Sox uniform, and I was one of them.
Yeah, but listen, you got the better end of it because he basically broke the curse for you guys. He became a Yankee, and then you guys won a World Series in 2004. So, I mean, that basically gave – that was the straw that broke the camel's back, as they say, and gave the Red Sox that they broke the final curse. That's what I truly believe.
Yeah, no, fair. I mean, certainly he's definitely a part of that narrative and storyline. I got to tell you, though, the Boston Red Sox right now looks like they're just trying to, like, do Netflix specials and grow the fan base instead of trying to win World Series championships. So it's a really interesting time, in all seriousness, to be a Boston Red Sox fan because things have really changed. And I don't know if it was winning that fourth chip in 2018 or what they're trying to do exactly. Maybe buy a basketball team or something, but they're not trying to win a World Series in Boston right now.
In between that and the football team, dude, I don't know what's going on in New England. I mean, I feel bad. I almost feel bad for you and Dana and everybody, but not so much because you had such a run with Bill Belichick, let's put it that way, and Tom Brady.
I can't wait to see Belichick get a job at some point in time so he can prove whatever naysayers there out there are that he can still coach. All he wants to do is coach. I wouldn't be surprised if he took a high school job during his off year.
John, they're talking about Brian Daboll being worried for his job because Belichick's in the wait to take over if they have another losing season for the New York Giants. So, I mean, it's like a match made in heaven, expecting it already to happen. It's going to be crazy. I personally, listen, he's one of the GOATs of all time, but I just don't want that just yet. But let's get to the pay-per-view. Let's get to the card. By the way, we are honored to have you here because we have in this area, in New York, we have some of the best play-by-play voices of all time. Talk about John Sterling with the Yankees, Howie Rose with the Mets. But you, my friend, are unbelievable and one of the GOATs as well, especially for the UFC. You are so passionate. When you took over as the lead voice for the UFC, it was amazing. It's a long day, though, man. I don't know if people realize you're there for like 7 hours doing live fights, but how much time do you have leading into the fights, too?
Well, so when I'm in a back-to-back, which is to say back-to-back Saturday shows, maybe a fight night leading into a pay-per-view, which we try to avoid, it's just insane when you think about the volume of fighters, as many as 30 fighters on a fight card in back-to-back weeks. You do the math, right? And if you just think about fighter prep alone, like I just had my review and I said my biggest anxiety is fighter preparation because there's so much of it. But for a pay-per-view like this, when I got a couple weeks in the lead-up, it makes it a little bit easier. But these are monsters to prepare for, and I appreciate the words and you acknowledging that. You know, oftentimes we are on a headset for like 8 hours, and I think I've conditioned myself as an announcer to sort of handle that grind, and it is TV and not radio, so little silence in there is okay. But I really do think there's like conditioning that goes into executing a broadcast like ours. And I feel like the one thing I can always control, even if I'm not particularly articulate on a given night, is my energy. And, you know, hopefully that comes across on a live microphone. But yeah, it's these pay-per-views are crazy, man. You know, it's our live events are just insane, and we got another big one, of course, in a few hours.
Yeah, no, and one more sleep, as you always say. I'm excited to have again John Anik on, UFC commentator, play-by-play, lead play-by-play for the pay-per-views. And you know, you do have a great crew, too. I mean, I'm going to kiss some tush here real quick. Between Rogan and DC, it's phenomenal, but then you got Megan O'Leary or Laura Sanko, whomever it is, if it's Bisbing filling in. I mean, you guys, who... It's amazing to have a guy like Rogan, who's a big fan, yourself as a big fan of the sports, but then to have the fighters as well and the other commentators, everyone just is so passionate, understanding of the level of fighting that's going on. It really is. You guys have like the best crew in the business.
Well, that means a lot, and I appreciate it. Yeah, there are a lot of talented talking heads, and of course, when you're looking at Joe Rogan to your right, it's just an incredible honor to share that space with him. And, you know, we called a pay-per-view for the first time together, I think, in 2012 on 3 days' notice, and then in 2017, full-time. And I think he'll be there forever, man. You know, it's just it's an amazing job. And certainly for him, as a ravenous mixed martial arts fan, he wants that seat and wants it, I think, longer than people think he's going to stick around for. And, of course, the wealth of UFC fighters I have to my right. It's great. And as announcers, honestly, I'm a sports fan, right? When I'm not talking about the announcers or not thinking about the announcers, oftentimes that is the gravy for me, you know. So to have you acknowledge our collective work, you know, means a lot. But Dana White's our boss, so we got to earn it Saturday night, you know.
Well, you know, Dana White's been in the media lately about the Howie Mandel thing. In your opinion, did you saw him walk off the Howie Mandel thing? Was that a fix? Was that a work, or was that real?
You know, no informed speculation here. It looked like a work to me. I mean, certainly I would be suggestive that Dana White has done a tremendous amount of media over the last couple of weeks, Super Bowl in Las Vegas and everything else. So certainly, you know, you could – it's a good time to probably try to pull off something like that. But, yeah, it looked like a work to me. And if not, you know, God love him for just calling it into it, you know, because enough is enough. And he's been, you know, burning it, I would think, at all ends with Super Bowl leading into a pay-per-view.
Listen, you I'm jealous of you guys for what you do. It's my passion project is the UFC and the MMA world. I just love it so much. I've been a fan forever. And now I'm at the point now where I have my kids. I got my 6-year-old. His friends are coming around. My 14-year-old. The house is packed with kids, which gets me to the one point about MMA, which I do. I love it. I love what Dana White had to say about Sean Strickland. But I do, the one thing I'm trying to figure out, we allow our fighters to basically go ahead and say whatever they want to. And that's great for the sport. And Dana White will never, you know, put a muzzle over them. But you as a, you know, working for the company and whatnot, sometimes do you cringe where it's like, oh man, that's not the message I want to throw out there?
Well, I mean, I don't have a lot of strong opinions when it comes to certain issues that maybe a lot of other people have strong opinions about, but I do think there is a line that maybe doesn't get crossed as perpetually as some people think. But I do appreciate and get to feel sort of that freedom of speech from Dana White, because I host a podcast and sometimes, you know, my opinion may differ from promotionally what they're doing. And whether it's on social media or on my show, I'm never prevented from, you know, giving an opinion that differs from their own. You know, I think they respect the opinion. It's hopefully done in a respectful way. And, you know, it doesn't always have to align with theirs. So that, you know, what's interesting for me is sometimes when people think I'm a shill, I've never been told to do one thing by them, but be true to who I am, you know. So I like that the fighters are afforded that. And honestly, I would almost turn the question back on you and say, you know, should they just draw a line, you know, when it comes to certain things? I mean, certainly people would like religions and families to be eliminated, but, you know, that would eliminate a lot of good stuff on families, right? So I don't know. I don't know where you draw the line.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, because my kids will question things like about certain things that people say, like Sean Strickland, for example, you know, and I hate that because I'm like, I want them to enjoy the fights. I want them to get into it. I want them to promote it. And then with tough conversations, which again, I'm a father, so I have to deal with that. And I'll handle whichever way I need to. And you know, and it's funny, John Anik is joining us right now, UFC lead commentator for pay-per-view. You know, it's funny, you yourself just kind of last week or 2 weeks ago, I forgot which fight it was, you kind of had a little backlash on your podcast as well because you kind of said things, you were a little frustrated with some of the social media play that people were attacking you. And you don't, listen, social media is a cesspool. Like, if you understand what my host, the show that I produced for Brandon Tierney and Sal Licata, I just had them dress up as Goldust and Doink the Clown because they lost the bet. And they got murdered on social media. But they get murdered anyway. It's something that you just can't, you don't want to look at. But, like, you went and apologized. I understand because you had some words that you were a little, you threw your frustration out. How do you handle, you know, do you normally look at social media or do you try to avoid that as well?
Oh, no, I'll never post and ghost. I have sort of built my reputation on fan engagement and being a conduit for these people, so that's never going to change. Maybe I have to be a little bit more selective when I engage. But honestly, bro, talking to you man-to-man, it was really just an emotional moment on my podcast. Bias or a lack of objectivity is really the only jumping off point for me when it comes to sensitivity. Like, truly, bro, talk about my kids, right? Like, it's just in one ear, out the other, moving on to try to find something constructive when I do have the time to engage. But in that fight, you know, it seemed like I got into this sort of conversation with a lot of Sean Strickland fans who allege maybe some bias on the call. And if we don't have our objectivity, we have nothing. And I went back and watched it, and it was an even-handed call, as I would say 99% of them have been. Sometimes in our sport, when strikes land simultaneously, you're careful not to sort of lean into one fighter, but your eyes can only move so fast, and I don't have to tell you how fast-moving a sport it is. But, you know, that's the only sensitivity for me, and just had a moment. But by and large, these people have just been so great to me and shown us so much love, as you have tonight, in terms of the broadcast team. And, dude, we're just trying to be as listenable as possible for 8 hours, right? Like, that's really it. Like, to not get in the way of the live sporting event and to add to it, you know, that's what we're trying to do.
I don't know how you guys have the stamina for that, because I took my kid, the oldest, JD, I took him to the pay-per-view, not this year, but I took him 2 years ago to the pay-per-view, and we were there for the entire card because he just wanted to be there. It was the Izzy Alexa the Pereira fight, and he just was like, towards the end, he barely could make it out of there. We were getting exhausted. I don't know how you guys keep the energy, but you do. John Anik joining us. UFC 298 tomorrow, pay-per-view. The main event starts at 10, but 6 o'clock, you got the prelims. The main prelims start at 8 o'clock. I mean, you got a whole night of it. But let's get to the pay-per-view, UFC 298. Alexander Volkanovski versus Ilya Topuria. And listen, you talk about a flip of a coin for featherweight division. This is one of the, you know, Volkanovski could go down as the greatest featherweight of all time. And he's going up basically a flip of a coin in Topuria. Give me why this fight is so close on paper.
Well, it's interesting. I do think a lot of handicappers and bettors lean into age, right? You got a 27-year-old taking on a 35-year-old. And I also think that undefeated records can manipulate betting lines, not for better or for worse necessarily, but I think those are two angles. We just don't know exactly how good Ilya Topuria is. In my opinion, if he doesn't win Saturday night, he's got a great chance to be a champion in the future. He's a five-tool player. He's been Greco-Roman wrestling since he was 4 years old, and you know, he does have big hands for a man his size. I think he has power. You know, he thinks he's the better finisher in this equation. But let us be clear, Alexander Volkanovski is the consensus greatest featherweight of all time. He's been a much bigger betting favorite against past opponents. This is his sixth title defense. I think Volk is much closer to prime than not at 35. I expect both guys to be great. I don't expect Topuria to be fazed by the atmosphere. But our sport is effing crazy, right? So something crazy could happen in the first round, and people would maybe make great proclamations that Volk came back too early from a knockout loss, or Topuria is going to be the greatest of all time. I expect a competitive fight. I think it gets out of the first round, and just can't wait to call it. Like I say, man, I grew up in Boston. I'm not a martial artist. I don't want to put on a gi or train jiu-jitsu, but there are 14 Super Bowls a year, you know, the one the NFL does and the 13 that we put on, and hopefully people will watch Saturday night.
Yeah, and by the way, you were in between both of them. Who felt stronger yesterday at the ceremonial press conference? Topuria tried to steal the belt. You were in between. Who felt like the stronger of the two?
They both felt significantly stronger than me. Topuria, I definitely felt his strength, right? He was not going to be denied. I told Volk I wish I was a little bit quicker on the trigger, but, you know, did everything I could.
All right, I know you're running out of time here, but real quick, what is your favorite fight of the night going in? I'm telling you right now, mine is Robert Whittaker, Paul Acosta. I love those two guys. I know on paper it's not as close of a fight. Whittaker has the edge. But Paul Acosta, if he can be the old Paul Acosta, the one we saw versus Yoel Romero, the one that we've seen in the past, he is a game changer. He's got some heavy strikes. But is Robert Whittaker going to have his day and win another fight versus Paulo Costa?
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, I mean, Robert Whittaker, I think skill for skill is as good as any middleweight in the world, and he's a future Hall of Famer. But I think there are two fighters on Saturday night that on their best Saturday night certainly can be world champions. Paulo Costa at 85 and Jeff Neal taking on the undefeated Ian Machado Gary. Like, Jeff Neal is a big underdog Saturday night, but if he's at his best at 170, he's amazing to watch. Ian Machado Gary is a guy who I've called a future champion. That's a big fight. But I think Paulo Costa, this is it, right? Like, this is it. If you're a Paulo Costa fan and you followed his career, a win over Robert Whittaker is as good as a title shot, even if he isn't necessarily next. So it's a huge spot for him. He usually rises to the occasion, but he's an underdog Saturday night, so we'll see.
And final question for me, because Merab Dvalishvili does train here at Long Island with the Longo crew, Sarah Longo crew, which you got to give a shout-out to. He's facing Henry Cejudo, former champ. I mean, Dvalishvili is a favorite. He's, you know, a relentless wrestler who the takedowns, I mean, he basically breaks records every time he steps in the cage. Is this going to be another easy win for Dvalishvili, or is Henry Cejudo going to shock the world?
There are a few fighters I have more respect for than Merab Dvalishvili. Just a tremendous worker, right? His nickname's The Machine, and it honestly doesn't even begin to describe it. There is no point of comparison. You can't simulate him in the gym. He's all MMA offense all the time. 9 wins in a row. But this is the fight that he has to win. And of course, he's fighting a guy in Cejudo who, you know, struck Olympic gold for the United States and is regarded by many as the greatest combat sports athlete of all time, at least on resume. You know, I just think it's a fascinating fight. And when you were sort of intimating what's the fight that you're most looking forward to, Merab has put in so much hard work. I wonder where Henry's at this stage of his career. He seemed to have put in the requisite work because he knows that this guy's not going to stop coming at him for 15 minutes.
Well, listen, John Anik again, lead play-by-play for UFC pay-per-view. He's going to be calling UFC 298 with Joe Rogan, Daniel Cormier, and Megan O'Leary on the side as well. Thank you so much for the time. I know I appreciate it. You've had a long day. You're going to have a long night tomorrow. But again, I appreciate it. One more sleep for John Anik.
My pleasure, man. Pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, John Anik with us for UFC 298 tomorrow in Anaheim. And again, this fight to me, this card to me, it's really great. The one thing I didn't ask him, which I should have done, I just can't believe I just screwed this up. UFC 300, he said, and I screwed it up. I should have asked him. He said it earlier today, UFC 300, they have not announced the headliner for UFC 300 yet. And people are rumoring Conor McGregor's going to come back. People are rumoring what the main event's going to be. And he said his prediction was going to be the Justin Gaethje, Max Holloway. So for all the UFC 300 people out there that are trying to figure out what's going to be the main event, that was Anik's prediction. And we'll see how that goes. But this card tomorrow night, UFC 298, I'm a huge fan of Anik's work. I'm a huge fan of UFC. I will always promote the hell out of this stuff. And there's some really good really good fights here. Now, Alexander Volkanovski, again, the age with Volkanovski, it's one of those things where now the stats keep on piling up, and they've had a ton of different examples of the older fighters losing to younger fighters. Like, that's just a thing now. Like, they'll put the stat up there that like 73% of fighters with an age gap of like 8 or plus years are the younger fighter will find a way to win. But the talent between Alexander Volkanovski, like, you look at a guy like Randy Couture back in the day, the heavyweight champion, a former heavyweight champion. Randy Couture fought till he was 46 years old. He was winning fights. He was winning at 44 years old. He beat somebody who was nearly twice his size. And you look at a guy like Volkanovski, again, very small in stature. He used to be a rugby player or Irish football guy, whatever it was. He used to be like 200 plus pounds. He's fighting at 145. So he has that natural strength, even though he cuts down the weight. He can still find a way to own that cage, own Topuria. Again, we don't know how Ilya Topuria is going to go head-to-head in a title fight. Five rounds. It's a whole different ballgame, especially in the UFC for these main events. But it's going to be a good card. I am looking forward to Paulo Costa in the light heavyweight division. Middleweight division. Paulo Costa, who was one of my favorite fighters back in the day, just has never been healthy. Continues to, you know, has had suspensions, has had injury problems. Robert Whittaker, one of the better middleweights out there. Couldn't beat Israel Adesanya, but again, very exciting fighter. There's a lot of good fights on here. For me, if there's something on the undercard that you really want to look out for, it's at 6:15. It's the opener, Miranda Maverick versus Andrea Lee. I think Andrea Lee, if anybody knows Donald Cerrone, that's a fighter that, you know, was a lightweight fighter, sometimes fought in the welterweight division, but was just a Muay Thai striker, fun. And Andrea Lee's kind of like that. She brings the fight. It's a battle. And Miranda Maverick, though, who is an up and comer, who is trying to make the rise. I think she has the edge, but it's going to be a good fight. Anyway, 877-337-6666, UFC 298. I'm looking forward to it. Mackenzie Dern's also on the card, too. A bunch of good fighters. It's one of those things where, and it's funny, John Anik, the one thing that he did mention, just with the, we talk about A-Rod, right? We talk about A-Rod being, you know, this firepower, this, you know, off the field type of personality that always has a camera in front of his face, wants that attention. And a lot of these fighters usually don't get the attention, but they, the ones that do, the ones that are vocal, sometimes they go above and beyond. And listen, MMA is not fake. You know, wrestling is not fake. Wrestling is, you know, WWE is fake as far as, like, you know, the scripts and whatnot. But what they do in the ring, in the cage, it is violent, all that other stuff. But they are trying to build personalities. They are trying to throw pops, get attention. There's certain guys that are trying to build characters in MMA, in the UFC, who are trying to just, you know, find a way to grab that attention. They see the Conor McGregors of the world and see how he steamrolled through everything and basically, you know, got popular. The Irish, you know, Americans were behind him. His country was behind him and made a wave. And the popularity, the notoriety, the money, the fact that he was able to go into a boxing match with Floyd Mayweather, that's what people are trying to emulate. And it's one of these things where not everyone could be Conor McGregor, but they could try. And the vocal, the conversations that lead after a fight, what they say, how the terms they use, the words they use, the verbiages, it's sometimes it's insulting, sometimes it's a little over the top. And that's the problem, is that there's no filters for these fighters. There's filters when it comes down to athletes in baseball, athletes in the NFL, in hockey. There has to be filters because you don't want those. You kind of have to be a little PC. You can't just speak your mind, and that's what Dana White allows you to do in the UFC world. Is say what you got to say. I'm not going to put a filter on you. Say, you know, if there's going to be consequences, it's not on me. It's on you, but we're still going to allow you to fight. And for me, that sucks because sometimes it puts us in predicaments that I don't want my kids to be, be around. Some of those conversations are a little too difficult. Now, meanwhile, I'm sitting there letting them watch people punch each other in the face. So go figure. It happens. Anyway. Great conversation with John Anik. I appreciate that. Again, UFC 298 tomorrow. 10 o'clock is the main event, but you'll be seeing fights from 6 p.m. on, which is a long night, but I'm looking forward to it.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong, because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled-up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night. Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama. Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.